Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It is one of my favorite days out of the entire calendar year. It is round one of the NCAA tournament. It has started today. It's going on right now. Duke is in trouble. Duke is going to lose, right? UNC Wilmingham hasn't made the tournament in 5 years or 10 years or something like that. All the guys in the game have never even played in the tournament, and they're giving Duke, the defending national champion, some trouble off the top. Love March Madness. My name is Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmat today here on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Brad, the father of the groom. Exciting weekend in the Sesmat family. So the rest of us picking up the slack. I was in yesterday, again today. We got Paula, Eric, tomorrow. Got Paula Boven. So a jam-packed week with all sorts of good stuff. It's March Madness, and it's really exciting. Coming up on the show, got to talk U of A. Hey, they've got a tough matchup. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, but they have got a grind of a matchup with Wichita State coming up here later tonight from Providence, Rhode Island. So we will be joined by the voice of the Wildcats, Brian Jeffries. He'll be coming up here in about 10, 15 minutes. And then Chris Cartman, ASU spring football is underway in Tempe this week. We'll talk to the Sun Devil Source publisher about all things ASU, especially what everyone is going to be talking about this spring, all the way up until fall camp, the quarterback battle. And let's bring in Eric, because off the top, we got to talk about the Arizona Cardinals. I want to talk a lot about college basketball, and we're going to do that with Brian and then maybe at the back end of the show. But off the top, we got to talk about what the Arizona Cardinals did over a 24-hour span. And Tuesday around noon, we were putting together our football show on Fox Sports Arizona, and all of a sudden we had to stop and restart almost everything. We make Jared go nuts over here because he wants everything organized and set up and good to go. And we were almost there until the Chandler Jones trade happened. Eric running out in the parking lot, tracking Brad down. Everyone's going nuts. They track down Brad. We refilmed the show because Chandler Jones traded to the Cardinals for Jonathan Cooper in a second-round pick. And almost exactly 24 hours later, the Cardinals address another area of need. They lose Cooper in the trade. They gain another guard who is going to be their starting right guard, a one-year deal to Evan Mathis, formerly with the defending Super Bowl champ Denver Broncos. He was an all-pro player with the Philadelphia Eagles. It's a contract worth a reported $6 million and $69, I think it was, Eric, because he wears the number 69. Everyone's very excited about that addition. And Eric, you were down there in Tempe yesterday at their facilities. What were some of the reaction? What were some of the comments, not only from Chandler Jones and Steve Keim, but also about the Evan Mathis addition?
Well, one of the things that came up towards the end of the press conference was last week we were sort of waiting for the Cardinals to make the big splash because free agency had opened and the Cardinals made some minor moves. And then, like you said, we go into this week and within 24 hours, they get their starting rush end that they needed. They get help on the interior of the offensive line, which they needed. And something that, again, came up towards the end, which is interesting, is now going into the draft, the Cardinals have flexibility. They don't necessarily have to take a pass rusher in the first few rounds. They don't necessarily have to upgrade their offensive line in the first few rounds. So the whispers now are the Cardinals and Steve Keim going to possibly trade out of the first round, save the money from having to pay a first-round pick, and just stockpile picks, because we know the success that Keim and that scouting department has had in the middle rounds. So it should be interesting.
Yeah, they've almost had more success in the third round when you look at, you know, John Brown, Tyrann Mathieu, Marcus Golden, than they have in the first round. If you look at Jonathan Cooper, DJ Humphries, and obviously Deion Buchanan has been spectacular, but it is interesting. I think what you hit on the money notion here, that flexibility in the draft now, because we've seen the Cardinals in the past reach for players at a position of need because he's the next best available. Mm-hmm. Hence, Levi Brown comes to mind. There are a couple other guys that come to mind where the Cardinals were in a position where they needed to select someone that filled a hole, and they needed to get one of the best available, even if it wasn't the best, and they reached. And now I'm not saying, you know, there was rumors of Emmanuel Ogbah. You follow Big 12 football.
Very good
player. As
much
as anyone.
Really, really good player at Oklahoma State.
Yeah, mock drafts that linked him to the Cardinals. Hey, if he's still there, Eric, even with the addition of Chandler Jones with Marcus Golden there, and, you know, if they bring back Dwight Freeney again, I'm still not opposed to them getting another pass rusher. You can't have too many of those.
Because the thing is, Jared, they're going to have Chandler Jones on the books next year, and then they could franchise tag him, so he could potentially be here two more years. So there is some flexibility down the line in terms of giving him – he's going to break the bank.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if he has 12.5 sacks again this year, his value is going to skyrocket. But you can never have enough guys coming off the edge to get to the passer, especially in the NFC West.
But what this does now, to your point, is say Ogbah isn't the guy, or say maybe they don't have him listed that high, which I'd be shocked because, you know, you've watched way more Big 12 football than I have, but even he's stood out to me. If he's not the guy, they don't feel like they have to go for him and have to reach for him, because he's the next best pass rusher available. They can go after the next great safety. Hey, you know what? They might not be able to bring Michael Floyd back next year, and Larry Fitzgerald might be retiring here in a year or two. Maybe you go out and get a first-round level receiver. That you have the flexibility to do that. Does it help you right away getting a receiver in the first round? Probably not, but you have the flexibility to be able to do so because of these moves that you made, and you do not need to reach for anyone too early. And you know, someone mentioned to me right after the Chandler Jones trade, even before Evan Mathis, of why don't they trade out of the first round? At first, I was like, why would you? You might as well get a great player. But when you think about it, now that you've added Mathis, it almost makes sense to trade out of the first round if you don't need it to stockpile picks. Hey, there's a fantastic center in this draft by the name of Ryan Kelly, not to be confused with the Oregon commit Basha quarterback Ryan Kelly. So a different frame, different sized guy. At Alabama, one of the better centers, they're saying, in the last couple drafts. That could be there if they trade back into the early to mid second round.
Yeah, the Cardinals don't have a second round pick.
Yeah.
So it would make sense for them to trade back and pick up a second, maybe a third round pick.
So here's a scenario for you, though, Eric, that I was thinking about leading up to today's show. We talked to Lee Steinberg. He was a guest with Brad Sesmat earlier in at the end of last week. What if Paxton Lynch slips to 29? You're looking at a situation where, one, you can draft him. He's the quarterback of your future. Or two, there are going to be teams for sure at that value that are going to want to trade up for him. Imagine how many picks you can stockpile if Paxton Lynch is sitting there.
I don't think he's going to be there, but it's always fun to play this game. There's no way Paxton Lynch is sitting on the board at 29.
And I would be shocked as well. I think he's the best quarterback in this draft, personally. I think he's better than Jared Goff, and I haven't seen enough of Carson Wentz to really have an exact opinion about him. But I think he's, because of what I've seen out of him and his intangibles and his size, I think he's the best quarterback in the draft. So if he's there at 29, I'd be shocked. But now, because of these moves that the Cardinals have been able to do in the last 24-hour span, but basically in the last 48 hours, they've created the flexibility where they hold all the cards. And there is no better situation to be in, especially if you're picking 29 and you're not number one. It's pretty incredible. So kudos to Steve Keim. And I know a lot of people around here are super psyched for training camp already.
Sure.
Ready for it to get started.
And I am of the opinion that even if this Chandler Jones trade doesn't pan out as many of us believe it will, no one is going to blame Steve Keim, because this franchise is now proven that, you know what, we're going to go for it. We made it to the NFC Championship game. We know what we need to do to take it to the next level. They go out and get a young pass rusher, 12.5 sacks. Even if he doesn't have a really productive season next year / career with the Cardinals, we're going to give Steve Keim a pass. Because, they're not sitting back waiting. I mean, they went out and they got a 25-year-old pass-rushing machine.
And on top of that, to your point, I touched on this yesterday during the show, it couldn't have worked out better from a financial situation as well. Because instead of throwing crazy money at Olivier Vernon or Mario Williams, who's older, they have a guy for $7.8 million this year. Like you mentioned, if they could tag him at the end of this year,
that's two more years.
That's 2 years at about $22 million. That's not 5 years, $58 million that you're tied yourself down to. And if it doesn't work out, like you mentioned, you know, you're not locked into a contract. it's a great situation to be in with a really impressive player. So the Cardinals have done a fantastic job this offseason. I'm excited for the draft to see where they go for it. Well, we got to get into March Madness talk. That's coming up next. Brian Jeffries, the voice of the Arizona Wildcats, will join us from Providence. They play Wichita State tonight at 6:20 p.m. on TNT. So we'll check in with the voice coming up next to talk all things U of A as they begin their tournament quest this season. My name is Jared Cohen. I'm filling in for Brad Sesmat today on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/Sports360AZ.
The Brad Sesmat Show on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports are filling in for Brad today. He's the father of the groom this weekend, so it should be an exciting time in the Sesmat household. Their firstborn getting married. That's a life moment right there. We're excited for him. Coming up next, joining us right now, one of the best in the industry, one of my favorite people in the industry, Brian Jeffries, the voice of the Arizona Wildcats. And as I sit here, Brian, UNC Wilmington, on top of Duke, 43-40, if I know you right, you had this upset pegged from the start, even before this game started.
Oh, yeah, I've got Wilmington going to the Final Four. You know, I have that clairvoyance about me. No, that's Jared, this is the great part about March Madness. You know it all too well, that anything can happen, and they've still got a half a basketball to play here in Providence. But it's kind of fun. It's great to see mid-majors like that show their best stuff in this tournament, and we'll see some upsets. We always do, and that's what it's all about.
Well, speaking of upsets, I think a lot of people have this game between U of A and Wichita State circled because it's a very intriguing matchup, not just because it's two teams that have been very prevalent in the tournament over the last few years, but because really a lot of people think Wichita State was underseeded. The fact that they were even in the first four game is one thing, but even being an 11 seed is another. What stands out to you initially to why this could be a tough game for Arizona coming up tonight?
Well, Wichita State's defense is one of the best, if not the best, in the nation. They give up only 59 points a game, which leads the country. And, you know, a lot of people thought with the increased scoring around college basketball this season that the Shockers might see a change. And, gosh, they're giving up two more points a game than they did last year. And that tells you a little bit about how good a defense Greg Marshall has built there at Wichita State. So that's number one. And number two is one of the reasons Wichita State plays good defense is they have the ability to take the ball away. They force 15 turnovers a game. They average 7 steals. They've really built the program around defense because offensively, to be perfectly blunt, you know, they just don't have a whole lot going. They have two outstanding seniors in the backcourt. But defense wins championships, and, you know, they won the Missouri Valley Conference championship because of that again this year, Jared. So Arizona's got to find a way to score the ball tonight. If so, I think the Wildcats have got, you know, they've got enough firepower to get it done, but I'm really interested to see how they match up against Wichita State's defense.
Brian Jeffries, the voice of the Arizona Wildcats, joining us here on the Brad Sesmat Show. Jared Cohen in for Brad today. You know, Brian, this is a matchup that could have happened a few years ago. If U of A didn't fall short to Ohio State in the Sweet 16, they would have met in the Elite Eight. So you were around the team and around this Wichita State a couple years ago. What stands out about these guards and the fact that they are 2 years older with Van Vliet and Baker that could make them so lethal and not your typical mid-major?
Well, they're tough. I think that's the thing that stands out the most. And I got that comment from Caleb Karzewski. He had a chance to play with those guys at on the Pan Am team last summer. In fact, he roomed with Van Vliet during that time together. And when he came back, and I'll go back to October, we were just sitting around talking about his experience at the Pan Am games, and he had mentioned that he'd played with Van Vliet and Baker because they'd been on the team as well. And he says, those guys are two tough son of a guns. And he could understand why Wichita State has been such a good program over the last couple of years because of that toughness. And so you take that, you look at some of the other guys they have on their roster, Shaq Morris at 6'8", 260. I talked about the defense earlier, and I think that's what stands about those two guards is that they've been around, they've got great experience, they know how to win in the NCAA tournament, and they just don't give up much. And offensively, they both can score the ball. Van Vliet and Baker, they average 26 between them. They both shoot the ball reasonably well from outside the arc. And so you just love the fact that they've been together now for 4 years, and that's why Wichita State has been on this run.
As great as the Shockers are defensively, one of the stats that I pulled up in looking at this game was the fact that they are one of the worst teams in the nation in fouling and giving other teams an opportunity to go to the foul line. I think it was some crazy number, like they're 329th in the nation with free throws allowed per field goals attempt. And there's an advanced analytic for you. So when you guys have guys like Alonzo Trier and Ryan Anderson who've made a living at the free throw line this year, you got to think that these guys, if they step up, could have big nights if they try to exploit that.
Yeah, hang on just a second, Jared. I'm writing this note down.
There you go. I'm glad I can contribute to the broadcast.
Okay, I got that.
Tonight.
That's my goal. I'll use that, okay? and you're right. And Arizona is one of the nation's leaders. Not leaders, but they've been near the top all season long in terms of free throws attempted and free throws made. And Arizona's turned out to be a pretty good free throw shooting team. So I don't think there's any doubt that the Wildcats need to try and take advantage of that. Now, to Wichita State's credit, they're a very deep team. Greg Marshall will rotate guys in and out. It's not that they foul out a lot, but you're right. They will play physical ball. A lot of it's going to depend tonight on how the game is called. If the whistle is blowing a lot early on and the Wildcats get to the free throw line, certainly that's to their advantage. And I think from the Wildcats' perspective, they've got to play aggressive basketball. They need to attack. And I think if you look back over this season, I think one of the differences between Arizona's 25 wins and 8 losses, when they've been in attack mode on offense, when they've been aggressive, they have been a better basketball team. When they sit back and start trying to analyze half-court defenses, that's what seems to give them a lot of problems. And so I think if the Wildcats are aggressive tonight and to follow your lead there, they get to the free throw line, certainly could bode well.
Brian Jeffries joining us here on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Brian, let's talk about Ryan Anderson for a minute here, because it seems like when Ryan Anderson is on his A game, which we've seen often throughout the season, this Wildcat team is as good as they can be over the course of an entire game or a season or whatever. But there's some nights where it's just not clicking, whether it's defensively or offensively, and it kind of puts the rest of the team in disarray, I feel like. Is there kind of something to that where Ryan Anderson can really kind of hold the key to success for the Wildcats moving forward? Because man, when he's on his A game, the Wildcats really haven't lost.
Yeah, I believe that's very true. And there's a reason Anderson has led the team in scoring and rebounding. You just look back at the Oregon game that they lost in Las Vegas. He goes 2-for-13 from the floor, scores 6 points, grabs 6 rebounds. This is a guy that has been averaging a double-double all season long, and Arizona loses the ball game. Ryan's not necessarily a vocal leader on this team. Certainly statistically, he is a leader. But I think, Jared, you've got a good point there that the team follows his lead. And if he is at his best, I think the other guys thrive on that. And it also draws the defensive attention away from some of the other players. And teams have to concentrate on trying to slow down Anderson. Do they double-team him? Do they double-team Tarzewski? If they don't, then either one of those guys can hurt you inside. And that opens up the outside scoring for Gabe York and Alonzo Trier, et cetera. And so there's no doubt Anderson needs to play very well. This Arizona team does not have a lot of, I think Sean Miller's put it best, they don't have a lot of margin for error this season. In years past, he's had teams that could make mistakes and get away with it. This team, just the way it's built, doesn't have that luxury. And so they need, all 5 of their starters to play their best basketball. They need their bench to come in and contribute. And if so, then, this is a very good basketball team. But if guys are off their game, and Ryan Anderson was off his game against Oregon last week in Las Vegas, Arizona loses, and that could very well dictate the outcome tonight.
Brian Jeffries, the voice of the Wildcats, joining me, Jared Cohen, here on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Good stuff on the Wildcats. They tip off 6:20 tonight. You could actually catch that game here locally. It'll be on here in Phoenix and around the state. You can hear Brian Jeffries' call. I want to talk to you really briefly before we let you go about the Pac-12 overall, a record 7 teams making the tournament this year. Some tough news for Cal. It came out that Tyrone Wallace broke his hand and could miss the whole tournament. I'm wondering if you can give me a gauge on what your thoughts and what the Pac-12 will do overall and how detrimental this injury could be for the Bears in particular.
Well, of course, I'm rooting for the Pac-12. I think we kind of put our we take that line away of being competitors. When you get into the tournament, you want to see your fellow conference members do their best. It reflects well on the rest of the conference. And so, yeah, I think we're all rooting for the other six teams and hoping they make a deep run and make the Pac-12 look good. This has been a great season for Pac-12 basketball. There's an argument that it might be the best conference in the country. This is when you prove it, and that's how far those teams get into March. And so seven have a chance starting tonight. And I'm not going to sit here and say that I think one has a better chance. I mean, obviously, Oregon's had a great season. They're a number one seed. They have maybe the best opportunity of everybody to find themselves in Houston. But I don't think that they're a perfect team, nor is any team in college basketball this year. It's very balanced. In terms of California, that's a tough break, and no pun intended. You know, Tyron Wallace had already broken his hand earlier this season, missed five games. Cal recovered from that, had a great finish. They need him because they rely a lot on their freshman, Jaylen Brown and Ivan Rabb. They need that experience that Wallace brings them because guard play, when you get into the NCAA tournament, this is one of those old sayings that you know, that's going to carry you. And I've seen that enough in Arizona's NCAA tournament career games. I mean, you just go back to Mike Bibby and Miles Simon, and those guys were a great backcourt. Arizona went to national championship, and Cal has a really good backcourt. But if Wallace isn't playing or if he isn't 100%, I think that has a major impact on their ability to move on.
Brian, Duke just tied it up with UNC Wilmington, so your Final Four pick there in jeopardy. So I'm hope for your sake they could pull it out here in the second half.
Yeah, we still got 17 minutes to go, Jared. So, you know, plenty of time. It'll happen. Like I said, I love this time of the year. I love to watch these teams. Yesterday they had their practice sessions here at the Dunkin' Donuts Center, and you watch teams like UNC Wilmington or Yale or University of New York Buffalo. To them, this is an experience and maybe a once in a lifetime for those guys. And just to watch them soak it in is really special. And so you just hope for some great games.
Absolutely. Enjoy the experience yourself too, all right?
Doing our best. And yes, you can buy donuts here on every corner.
That's good to know. It's good to know if you go to Providence. Enjoy yourself. Don't eat too many of those. And we'll catch you tonight on the broadcast. Thanks, Brian.
All right. Thanks, Jared. Appreciate it.
That's Brian Jeffries, the voice of the Arizona Wildcats. Arizona tips off against Wichita State at 6:20 tonight from Providence, Rhode Island. It should be a tough one. I've got my my worried hat on today, Eric, because I think this is a tough matchup, and Wichita State is impressive. But, you know, this, you just get past that first round, then you get the momentum to maybe make a push forward, and I think that's what a lot of Wildcat faithful are hoping for. It's the Sports 360 and AZ Central Sports broadcast of the Brad Sesmatt Show. I'm Jared Cohen filling in for Brad today. And coming up next, we'll switch gears from U of A to ASU. ASU football spring practice is underway. We'll talk to Chris Cartman of thesundevilsource.com to talk about the storylines around the team and what to look out for as the team kicks off spring practices this week. Again, I'm Jared filling in for Brad on AZ Central Sports and Sports 360 AZ. Chris Cartman now joins us from the Sun Devil Source, the publisher from Scout.com, does amazing, amazing work around ASU, and it has been the start of spring practice this week. I'm Jared Cohen filling in for Brad Sesmatt today on the Brad Sesmatt Show here on Sports360AZ.com and AZ Central Sports. And Chris, off the top, before we get into the Devils on the football field, I got to know who your bracket-busting pick is now that your bracket is signed, sealed, and delivered, and you can't touch it.
So I'm watching this Wilmington game closely because I actually have Wilmington over Duke. But
do you really? We were joking with Brian Jeffries last segment about, oh, I bet you had that one right, and he's like, oh yeah, sure. But you actually have that?
Yeah, that's 113 that I actually took. I just picked a couple random ones. I'm not the type of person that has, you know, 10, 11 seeds going deep in the tournament because you're never going to win that way.
No.
But I do have Yale winning in the first round. I think that's kind of a common pick. I have a couple 12 seeds. My Wilmington pick is probably the biggest reach that I have, but we'll see if it comes to fruition. I always root for the underdogs, even if it goes against my bracket, because that's fun. You know, who doesn't want to see those Cinderella-type teams win a couple games and see if they can make a run?
I am rooting for them even harder now that I know that someone actually picked them. That is impressive. I picked Yale too. I like that upset. And the more that I picked it, the more I hear other people did it. So that doesn't make me too happy. But wow, good on you. They're giving them a shot here against Duke. You covered the Pac-12 with basketball all season with ASU this year. Of all the Pac-12 teams that made it, there are a record 7 of them. Which do you think is best lined up to make a push for the Final Four?
Oh, I think Dana Altman in Oregon is a tremendous job. I've been saying, I think for a while now, that I think he's the best coach. What they do defensively, and particularly Jared, is dynamic. They're multiple. They have the ability to flow between zone and man. They'll pressure you three-quarter court or full court. I like their personnel. I like their matchups in the bracket. I'm not sure that they're going to be a Final Four team. I have them falling in the Elite Eight, but I do think that that's the team that has the best shot, and just really love to watch them play, and Dana Altman, I think, should be a candidate for Coach of the Year with the job he's done there.
You couldn't agree more. And you mentioned their defense on their offense too. I'm amazed by how little the ball even touches the ground. You know, basketball, the whole point is you dribble to move. They're just swinging it around, getting high percentage shots, and the ball is barely touches the ground. People listening, pay attention to that when you watch Oregon. When they swing the ball around and they're moving it on offense, they barely dribble. It's all passing. It's really incredible to watch.
Yeah, I follow Synergy Sports, which is a great resource that coaches use in the community. And what you see when you study Oregon there is their percentage of uncontested shots at all levels of the court is much higher than the typical Pac-12 team, and definitely among the elite teams nationally. And it's exactly for that reason. It's the way that they understand how to move the ball to generate open shots, and that's really what it's all about.
It's good stuff. Chris Cartman from the Sun Devil Source joins us here on the Brad Sesmat Show. Chris, let's jump into what you've seen so far this week in spring practice, and I gotta start with the cliche question here. Quarterbacks, who has stood out so far, and who do you kind of give, based on your opinion and your thoughts and who you talk to, kind of has the leg up as we stand here today in March?
So the unfortunate side of this is that ASU's restricted our ability to watch spring ball really for the first time since I've been doing this. And so we're not seeing 11-on-11 action or even this what they call skeleton 7-on-7 action. It's mostly been skill development periods that we've seen. I think if you go back to December when all the bowl practices were open, I really felt like it was a very close between Bryce Perkins and Brady White. Of course, they have a new offensive coordinator now, Chip Lindsey. He's more of a guy who wants to get the ball out quickly from the quarterback. I think that is a better fit probably for Bryce Perkins. Bryce Perkins is a guy who, yeah, he's a great athlete. He's big. He's strong. He's physical. But he really wants to deliver the ball quickly and on time, a lot of slants, a lot of quick-hitting type routes. Brady White is also very capable of doing those things. I think it's very close. Everybody knows and talks about the fact that 2012, you had Taylor Kelly, who was third on the depth chart behind Eubank and Berkovici, coming out of spring ball, had a great summer, and then won the job in August. I don't think there was going to be enough separation whatsoever to be able to handicap this and say, oh, you know, this quarterback is the favorite for sure coming out of the spring. I just find that hard to believe. I think Manny Wilkins probably has the most upside of these three guys because of how athletic he is and the dynamic capability that he has with his feet. But he also has more downside because he's tended to be a one-read quarterback, not as apt to go through progressions. So I think he's more of a boom or bust guy. You're either going to probably see him end up third on the depth chart or end up being like a stud. I think it's very clear to me that Bryce Perkins fits this offense very well, doesn't have the downfield passing capability of the other two, but I really like Bryce Perkins and Brady White. I'm hedging a little bit, but those are my two picks right now.
So if you're the coach, you're thinking Bryce Perkins as we stand here right now?
I would actually maybe say Brady White. And the only reason I say Brady White is because he has a better arm down the field. So I think Bryce Perkins is tailor-made from a style standpoint. I think Brady White has all this little extra added capability from a big play standpoint, but it's a matter of tailoring the quarterback to your personnel. And so if the receivers allow for it, then I think White's got a little bit better potential. If you get Tim White and Cam Smith being able to beat defenses down the field, that's something that Brady White can exploit a little bit more than Bryce Perkins. So that's my reason.
Sun Devil Source publisher Chris Cartman joining us here on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Jared Cohen filling in for Brad today. One of the most important pieces for a quarterback to be successful is blocking up front. And their protection for Mike Bercovici last year struggled mightily at times. And they're getting a lot of turnover at this position because a lot of those guys were seniors and upperclassmen. So a lot of youth with the potential to move up this time of year. Who are some of the guys that you think that are younger that could make a serious push for some of these starting jobs that are open?
Well, that's a great question. And I think it's one of the keys to this whole team's success in the year ahead. And I think from just an athletic standpoint and an upside, what we always talk about when we evaluate kids, I think Zach Robertson and Steve Miller both are really high-level prospects, redshirt freshmen. Not even running with the first team right now. I expect that may change as we progress. I also really like Sam Jones, who played a little bit last year. He's got a chance to be the left guard. That's where they're running in with the first team right now. Stephon McCray's got experience. He's playing at right guard. I think the battle that we're going to really end up following here closely is whether Evan Goodman can play to his potential. He's a senior. This is his last opportunity athletically. He's got a lot of talent. I think he has the ability to play beyond college. Too many mental mistakes, not enough of a motor. He's probably been more penalized than the rest of the linemen who started last year combined. So he needs to get it in gear. Otherwise, Zach Robertson has a chance to move up. But Robertson's versatile enough to play multiple spots. And I think sooner than later, he's going to end up in the starting lineup and be a star.
I think it was at this, it was either today or yesterday, or maybe it's tomorrow. It's within this week, a year ago, is when we found out about Cam Smith being injured with the knee and being done for the year. And
right.
We're still asking the same questions about the depth of the wide receiving core of this unit. You have Tim White who emerged. You have Smith hopefully coming back. I don't know if you saw him out there this week. I wasn't able to get out there. But what is this wide receiving group looking like? Because it's still not the deepest position by any means, and they need people to emerge.
Right. So I think Cam Smith, good news for ASU, is he does look like he's back to basically 100%. Or close to it. Watched him closely on Wednesday. Did a great job going through all of these dynamic agility type drills. He showed explosive speed. I think he's there. He and Tim White are definitely your two top receiving options at this juncture. The guy that I would look for developing is Terrell Chapman. I think he's a redshirt freshman from Louisiana. I think he got under recruited. He's gained about 20 pounds. He's long. Tremendous ability to go make plays on the football, big catch radius. He's able to get behind the defense. He's now 200 pounds, 6'3", maybe 6'4". I just think he has a world of potential, and it's hard to imagine that he doesn't emerge. I think the new wide receivers coach, Jay Norvell, I really like what I'm seeing from him in terms of the way that he coaches that position, some of the skill development things. I think he's going to really add a lot there. Ellis Jefferson is a guy that everybody keeps waiting to emerge.
Sure, for two years now.
He's probably the most Jalen Strong alike from a skill standpoint, size, frame. He has that back shoulder capability that Jalen Strong was so great at. But it's a matter of consistent habits, and he hasn't put that forth yet. I think he knows this is his time. Otherwise, he's probably going to get passed by.
Chris, one more for you before we let you go. And I want to know, you were out here this week for all these practices. Other than the players that we've maybe touched on here briefly, like you mentioned with the offensive linemen, who are guys that just stand out to you that you just can't help but notice, whether they're returning players or new guys that are in the mix?
Well, overall, Jared, I think it's important to let people know this is probably going to be a transitional year. ASU football, new quarterback. I think a lot of the best talent on the roster is young. Whether that be sophomores, redshirt freshmen, maybe some of the true freshman guys coming in or junior college transfers coming in. I really, really like a couple guys on the defensive line. Jalen Bates is a redshirt freshman from Louisiana. He's probably 270 pounds now, 6'5", freakishly long, very explosive off the edge. He's running with the third team now. I don't see any way that he doesn't end up with a much bigger role as we progress heading into the fall. And then George Lee, who got in trouble, had to sit out last year because of the arrest. He's a defensive tackle who's probably the most dynamic interior pass rusher that we've seen ASU have since Will Sutton. I think you're going to see both of those guys really blossom and become impact players. Of course, I already mentioned Terrell Chapman and Zach Robertson on the offensive side of the football. And then Jason Lewis is a guy that we probably should mention. How many running backs around the country are 6'3", 245 pounds, and he's athletic at that speed. So I think the future's bright. Just got to go through a transitional period. If they hit on one of these quarterbacks, if one of them ends up being a mid-tier or better Pac-12 player, I think 2017 is going to be a great year for ASU football.
And you mentioned Jason Lewis like crazy last year. I remember you're going to be keep mentioning him until he finally breaks through, because his intangibles are incredible, and hopefully he lets loose this year.
Yes, off the charts. I just think again, they did a really great job in recruiting. They had back-to-back really good classes. This year, this past year wasn't quite as good, but they hit on a lot of guys who were going to be able to come in and help right away. They had the best junior college class in the country. You look at Karan Crump as a pass rusher. You look at Maurice Chandler, who's the one junior college guy who's working with the first team at cornerback. I think they're going to be a little bit more athletic on the back end now that they've lost Quishy Brown, Jordan Simone. So I think they're going to have a little better capability, probably play a little more zone, be more versatile. But I like where they're building, trending toward, not this season, but next season. So if they can just have a progression and then get through it, I think the future is going to be really good.
He's a machine. It's Chris Cartman from the Sun Devil Source. Really appreciate your time as always. We'll see you out at practice in the next few weeks. All right.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. That's Chris Cartman from the Sun Devil Source, the publisher. The guy knows this team in and out. There's really few people better to talk to when it comes to ASU athletics, especially as it pertains to football. And it's not looking good for his UNC Wilmington pick. They've been outscored by 10 points here in the second half. So he shouldn't have opened his mouth, because when we started the conversation, UNC Wilmington was up. Now they're losing. He let the cat out of the bag. So hopefully for his sake, they turn it around. Coming up next, a former Arizona Diamondback announced his retirement. He's a Chicago White Sox now, and it's a very intriguing story. We'll touch on that with Eric coming up next. We'll also get into a little more March Madness talk. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmat today on AZ Central Sports and Sports 360 AZ. Got some great battles going on here early in the NCAA tournament. We've talked about Duke and UNC Wilmington often so far in this broadcast. Butler and Texas Tech are in a battle. Colorado, the first Pac-12 team to get in action. They're so far up on UConn. Those 8-9 matchups are tricky. And a fan of the show goes by the name of Lauren Cohen. My mom texted into the show saying that she picked UNC Wilmington too. I'm trying to figure out what I'm missing here. How did I miss the boat so badly on this? Because Duke is, after all, the defending national champion. You know, you kind of just write them through, but I guess there's a lot of people that see that differently. And they're still alive in the second half, although Duke's taken a late lead here with about 10 minutes to go in the game. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmat today here on the show. And Eric, a former Diamondback, is in the news. Adam LaRoche, first baseman from the Chicago White Sox, announced his retirement for reasons that we really, quite frankly, have never heard of before.
Adam LaRoche, yesterday, as you mentioned, did retire from baseball. He turned away approximately $13 million.
Chump change.
The reason for his retirement and turning away that chump change is that his son, Drake, who is, I believe, 14, has, for the past few years, been essentially by his side throughout almost the entire baseball season. He went on road trips. He practiced. He was out. He had his own locker. He essentially practiced with the team. He had his own uniform, everything. And most recently, Kenny Williams, former ASU football player's dad, who is the president of the White Sox, approached LaRoche about cutting back the time that his son was with the team. LaRoche said, well, if that's going to be the case, I'm retiring. And officially, his paperwork has been placed, and he is on the retirement list.
Wow.
The most recent development to this story, oh, as I was just
late breaking,
as well, not somewhat late breaking, as I was just prepping for this segment. Apparently, according to Carl Ravitch at ESPN, the White Sox were considering protesting by not playing their spring training game yesterday.
The team,
the team,
the players on
yes,
the team.
Yeah, the team basically said in to back LaRoche were considering not playing in the spring training game. And Robin Ventura had to intervene and called a team meeting, and eventually they ended up playing. But this is a very, like you said, you hear players retire for a lot of different reasons.
Mm-hmm. Health, and family is a reason.
Sure, health, family, not to this extent.
Yes.
But, you know, the grind of the sport, coming to the end of the line. I mean, Adam LaRoche had a chance to cash in again, make a bunch of money. He's already made a ton of money. And he said, you know what? Right now, my family is more important to me than baseball.
And I look at this from two different angles, Eric. And, you know, I'm playing devil's advocate in one regard. But
you're a dad, we
yes,
should know. You're
yes,
a father of two beautiful daughters. I am not a dad yet. So your perspective will be a little bit different than mine. So go ahead.
100%. Let me go from the working in this industry angle first. You and I have been in locker rooms for every sport at the professional ranks. Locker rooms are not places for kids. I'm not going to try to talk like it's X-rated in there or R-rated and there's things that don't go on or do go on, but it's not really a place that's conducive for kids.
It's an adult environment.
It's an adult environment. And to the extent that it is, you know, in order for guys to be loose and comfortable in being there, especially for baseball, every day from February for spring training all the way through October if they go on a playoff run, that's a long time. Every single day, they need to be loose and comfortable and not have to worry about their surroundings. And when you have a kid that has his own locker and is there every day, you have to kind of taper back what you do, how you act. I had the privilege to be a bat boy for the Chicago Cubs when I was growing up. And it's because a family friend was in the coaching staff and gave me the opportunity when they were in town playing the Diamondbacks. I'm not going to say the player that it was because people know who he is. But I was there as a kid. I was maybe 9, 10, 11 years old. And he went off into another room to express frustration and took a bat and started swinging at things because he was frustrated. The Cubs were obviously struggling, which they did for most of both of our lives and yep, have been up until this season. But he took a bat to some equipment and went off. And he just so happened to see me out of the corner of his eye at the very end of it and all of a sudden calmed himself down and left the room. Now, that's an idea of a guy that even left the locker room area to express frustration and not be around people, and then just happened to see a kid that was in the hallway and then had to tone it back even more so he couldn't express it. So when you have kids around, 14 is a little more mature than I was at that age, but the fact that you have kids walking around, it can create a tough environment. And great for the White Sox players to back their teammate. That's what they should do. The players need to unify, but I would be shocked if this didn't stem from some of those same players going to the front office saying, it's great having him around, but this is just too much.
There's another layer to the story as I continue to dig a little bit deeper. There are whispers that when LaRoche, who used to play for the Nationals, signed with the White Sox, there was a part in his contract, there are whispers that said, my son needs to be around me as much as he can and as much as he wants and as much as we want. Now, if that's the case, and the White Sox are now saying, no, 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 no. I mean, there's another gray area here.
Yes.
Like, so say you want to bring your daughters to work. If our boss, Brad Sesmat, says, you know what, I'm sorry, you just can't bring your kids. He's the boss. It's his company. It's his space.
Mm-hmm.
You have to abide by that. However, if it was written in the contract that he could have his kid whenever he wanted at the facilities, now that's another gray area because
totally. It's
– and I think you're right. I'm sure a couple of the players, maybe off the record, went to Ken Williams and said, you know what? this is, we can't have this anymore. We're a bad baseball team. We need to focus on winning games. We can't have, we can't have a kid out here running around in his own uniform that says LaRoche on the back. And he's 14 years old, so he's not completely immune to the locker room clubhouse chatter. Mm-hmm. But the White Sox are a bad team. And if you're gonna, if you're gonna wipe the slate clean this spring, I completely see what the franchise wants to do.
Now, the other side of this angle is the being a dad point of it. And clearly having the kid, his kid prevalent in his life while he's going through this and wanting to be a part of it. I mean, he's 14 years old. In 3-4 years, he's off to college. He's out of the house. So I totally understand where Adam LaRoche is coming from, where he wants to be with his son as much as he can. And I understand the notion that it takes for him to say, you know what? This isn't worth it. I'd rather be with my son. I'd rather be with my family. And I have to say kudos to that, because how long in your life have you heard, Eric, you know, money can't buy you happiness. Money can't buy you love. Money can't buy you all sorts of those non-financial things that
family.
Make people
money
happy.
Can't buy you family.
And at the end of the day, you only live on this planet once. And Adam LaRoche has been fortunate enough to make a fantastic living playing the game of baseball for a number of years, to the point where he probably doesn't need to anymore. But even if he didn't, it sounds like he's the type of guy that says, you know what, this is my number one, this is my priority, to be with my kids, to be with my family, to cherish the moments that I have with them while they're still under my roof, while I'm still there. He'll always be their father, but while I'm still that father figure that's in their lives every single day, you know, I have nothing but respect for that decision.
And LaRoche is 36 years old, Jared, so he's
going to retire soon anyway.
Exactly. He may not be at the end of his career, but it's not like this guy's been tearing the cover off the baseball recently. He's probably got a couple more years left in the league, and he's probably going to retire.
But
so
this is just another example, and we've seen, I don't like using the word bully because I hate that word. As it pertains to anything other than bullies themselves. But we've seen major, like the NFL, like Major League Baseball, like even not as much the NBA, but these major organizations really flex their muscles in situations like this and feel like they can do whatever they want. And kudos to Adam LaRoche saying to the man, no thanks. I'm not going to listen to what you have to say, and you don't dictate what I can and can't do. So I have a lot of respect for him being able to do that in the face of the man, if you will. It's good for the other guys out there. So that's all I have to say about that. Eric, thanks for your help. Jared, as always, check out the Brad Sesmatz Football AZ tonight. We'll have Jerome Sowers and Daniel Bridgegat on the show. That's on at 10:30 after the Suns on Fox Sports Arizona. Special thanks to Brian Jeffries, Chris Cartman. I'm Jared Cohen. Have a great Thursday.